start recording just in case. Edit it.
Yeah.
Should start in a couple minutes, so.
93,000.
Oh, I knew that. How many? 93,163? 93,173, right?
Yeah, 173. 175 was Gorilla and Jesse.
Got that on tape.
What WrestleMania was this? It's a song. This was a Mania theme song, wasn't
it? Yeah,
it
was the one with Money Mayweather, wasn't it?
Yeah, I don't remember which one it is.
I think it was the one with
Survivor Series, even. I don't even remember.
Sounds like we're just gonna stay in this area, right?
Amos is so great.
What's that?
Amos is so great.
What? It's a good video. It's a good spot.
I'll just go instead. Okay.
All right. People are talking. Talking about people.
Allow me to beg your indulgence for one moment.
He's a man. If I can be serious for a minute.
We just got two words for you.
No, actually, that's not the word you're thinking of.
What's up, baby?
Hi,
People power. Hello. No, yes, really, no, yes, really, no, yes, really, no, yes, no, yes, no, yes, would you please shut the hell up? What? What? It wasn't my fault. The can you get there? Suck up!
Indeed.
If I can be serious for a minute,
I am the game.
No, instead of what?
Yeah.
Because I'm the Vince and die
the best in the world.
So far this weekend.
Ladies and gentlemen,
obviously the topic of this shooting straight panel is the Montreal Screwjob, the famous WWE Championship match from 1997 between Bret Hart and Shawn Michaels. We're going to talk about that here throughout the afternoon. We're going to go from beginning to end, and then we're going to open up the floor to questions. So I hope you guys brought all your questions for Jerry, Shawn, and Bret here today. But without further ado, I want to introduce one of the men who called this match at ringside in Montreal, the old Molson Center, that evening. He is a Hall of Famer, and yes, he is still with us. Ladies and gentlemen, Jerry the King Lawler. Which happened to be just about 6 months into my tenure here, and Jerry had been here for a few years. But nonetheless, you had a pretty interesting statement when I asked you what you recalled about that night.
Well, yeah, I told Michael, I said, look, if I can't remember dying, I sure can't remember something that happened in 1997. I remember more about the incidents of 1997 than I do what happened to me in September of last year. But I'm excited to be out here. I see I'm in sort of a precarious situation or position here. And somehow right at the last minute, I figured I was going to be one of the NCs, but they said, oh, you're in the middle. I've said this about Shawn and Bret over the years, because we get asked all the time, do those guys, I mean, do they steal or did they ever really just despise each other, or what's the deal? Did they ever get along, or do they get along now? And that's constantly we get asked that question. And I would always tell people, I felt, this is an old line that I've used before, these guys couldn't warm up to each other if they were cremated together. And that's what I would always tell people. And that's what I've always felt. But it seems that hopefully, 97, how many years ago was it?
16
years later. Maybe, I think everybody's trying to get past that. But judging by the fact that you are all here to hear and see it one more time, maybe we aren't past it. How many of us are past it? Wow. So, let's see a show of hands of how many are not past it. Well, there you go. That's why we're all here today, and that's why this is going to be very, very interesting. Very possibly exciting, and I can't wait to hear more from the two main characters here.
Well, let's show you exactly what happened. Let's take you back now to the closing moments of this match, 1997 Survivor Series, Bret Hart defending the WWE Championship against Shawn Michaels in Montreal.
The piece of crap himself is awful.
Next thing we're going to go dead end. We're going to get to this footage a little bit later on in this broadcast. Now we're going to show you the closing moments of the match from Survivor Series. See, thank you everybody off. Hey, don't blame that on me.
Thank you.
Yeah.
Say, after watching that, I like my seat even less. I know you felt the intensity right there. I mean, I'm reliving it and feeling how intense it was, but you can't even imagine what it felt like to be there and to be right at the ringside and to stand over there and watch Brett destroy the announce table that you just had to call the match from. I don't know about you guys, but I can't wait to hear what they say. Get them out of here.
Ladies and gentlemen, first the man who was the number one contender for the WWE Championship on that night at Survivor Series. He is now a Hall of Famer, and he runs his own hunting show, MRA, McMillan River Adventures. The Heartbreak Kid, Shawn Michaels. So, Shawn, welcome, and I know that you watched that footage in the back there. Rewatching that, what thoughts were running through your mind?
First of all, let's beat this dead horse some more, shall we?
I'm not gonna lie, I was not watching that in the back right when I was talking. But the reason I didn't watch it is because it's been forever. Burned. I mean, literally burned into my memory. So, you know, it's sort of hard to express. You know, it's almost like a very surreal thing now. It's like an out-of-body experience. You look at it and you know that it's you. But it doesn't feel like you anymore. I mean, we've come so far since then, so it's a very sort of strange thing. We go watch it, and then here you are sitting with the gentleman that you did that with, and you're talking about your kids, and you're talking about the old times and things like that. So it's a very strange thing to see.
Without further ado, the man who was WWE champion on that night in Montreal, he, of course, is the Hall of Fame.
Jerry, you might want to stop leaning in the middle and still try to get a picture.
Very bold. Anyway, Brett, I'll ask you the same question I just asked Shawn. Whenever you watch this footage, the end of that matchup, what goes through your mind?
I want to catch the first plane to Calgary to Connecticut with a machete. Practice the Second Amendment. Well, the truth is, I'm sure for not just me and Nick Shawn and everybody, there's a lot of emotion. But I think even for fans that that followed us through those days, they probably imagine, and rightfully so, that there was a lot of emotion through those days. And so I don't ever minimize it. I mean, it was always a really sensitive topic for me. And it took a long way. It took a long time to get to this point now, where you can look back on it and not get yourself all worked up about it. I've learned over the years, especially my best answer is to say after you suffer a stroke, you might really tell what happened to you last year, but you really learn to understand the most important things in life. And, when I size up my life these days, I'm generally pretty grateful for all the good things that WWE's given me. And I wouldn't have been anybody. They wouldn't be talking to me today if I hadn't been given a chance in the first place. giving us opportunities by Vince and fans who supported me for all those years. So, you know, in saying that, I've come back a few steps, and over the years I've come to appreciate both sides. And I know that as we go through this today, we'll find that we both got a lot of emotion and a lot of passion for those days, and it'll be interesting to see where it goes with the conversation, with the questions.
So, Brett, let's open some old wounds here and head back to 1997. Spoken like a true journalist. A year prior to 1996, you had signed what was called a 20-year contract with WWE. Come 1997, the company ran into some major financial problems, and apparently Vince McMahon basically came to you and said that you could reopen negotiations with WCW, which apparently you did. And reached an agreement with that company, correct?
Well, I was encouraged, strongly encouraged, to go back and see if I could retrieve whatever the remnants of whatever deal I had with him in the first place. And so I, you know, reluctantly sort of made the call, and was surprised to find that not only did I have the same offer, that it actually gone up a little bit. And, so then I had to think about whether, because you know, the reality is I never ever wanted to go. Right up until the day I signed that contract, I didn't want to go. Because I knew that when I left, that I would probably lose everything that I ever worked for. I'd lose all my my history and my legacy. And, you know, you think about things like the Hall of Fame, someday you're going to do that. All the things that I look forward to in my lifetime down the road as I got older when I retired and stuff were all sort of not going to happen anymore if I made that decision. And, you know, in the end, I made the decision based on what was best for my family. And, you know, I made that decision to go. But it was never about money. I think I would say that with all sincerity. That I was never, even the day I signed with the WCW, it wasn't about money. It was about a direction of where I was going. And, at that time, I didn't know that there was much of a direction for me to go.
I guess there was concern, Brett, on your part, don't get words in your mouth, but was your concern with the fact that you didn't like the villain role that Vince had basically had you playing for a number of months leading up to this point?
Well, no, that's not true. I actually love the villain role. I love the whole the Hart Foundation era with Kelvin and Owen and everything. I loved being a bad guy. I kind of felt a little bit like John Cena maybe does these days, but I've been around a long time, and the fans were not against me, but they were kind of looking for the next guy to come and take the torch. And, you know, being a babyface, after a while, it's the same old thing in the end, and people were, they still have my fan base, but at the same time, they were, you know, from a business standpoint, I recognized that there was time to make a change and time to some go with a new guy. And the heel role that was presented to me actually sounded pretty intriguing. I was going to be mostly a bad guy everywhere else, but the only bad guy in the United States, and I was going to be a good guy almost everywhere else. And that was kind of, I thought it was kind of unique. You know, I thought I could go with that. And I thought I found a thread of reality, like all the stuff I said about. You know, I can remember a lot of rants in the ring about gun control and things about Americans. A lot of them, I think, kind of stuck in people's heads, and they kind of was like, I was a different kind of heel. And I kind of liked all that. I actually had a lot of fun in that time. And in a lot of ways, I think those days prior to the screw job were probably the most fun days I ever had in wrestling. If I could go back and just live one day as the rest of the game, probably in those days. I'd love to go back and, a lot of ways, I wish I'd go back and do it all over again and do it, you know, have the right ending to it this time.
Sean, can I interject something real quick, Michael? I know you're the boss out here. You're on the shot. But, I mean, for Terry, you're talking about going back. And I wish, well, just for my sake, for my recollection, if we could go back a little further than that. I came to the WWE in 1993. You guys were both already here. You guys were the established major stars at that point when I came in. And I remember one of the first things, and maybe you guys can refresh my memory, but I know it wasn't Montreal, it was before that, I think. But I was in the locker room. I think I'd already had my match, and I had already just got the shower, and I think I was standing in the mirror shaving, and I heard this big commotion,
And suddenly, literally in the backstage area of this arena, the wall broke through. It's just like two guys were fighting, and I was literally standing there with no clothes on, shaving, and Shawn Michaels and Bret Hart broke through the wall. I mean, it wasn't a wall.
It was Hart for
partition. A partition. Okay, I'm sorry.
Well, just saying, Bret and I got to keep a strong, forward going.
But you guys were going at it. So I'm
just straight here, right?
Yeah. I want to go back to where the and you guys, we can admit that it was legitimate animosity. Where did it start?
I don't know if it was 93. I thought that was.
No, I just said I came to two here in 93. So it was after that.
I think you said you're talking probably close to it.
I was 10 here.
Yeah, 96.
That was in about May or June.
Yeah, we'll just say, yeah. But because like in 93, we were Brent and I as we lived to live on the DVD, and we had a real friendship and enjoyed working with each other. And I bet you Brent probably knows. I don't even know where it went off the rails. I mean, I know that at some point, obviously, it did. I know that I was,
I remember too well. what happened was, it's all, in a lot of ways, you can really say it was all being a misunderstanding. I had left Sean on the title at Anaheim, and I had left, and I remember going home, and I had left with the clear message, like I left the ring with Sean, we had mapped it out that way, that I wasn't going to shake his hand after the match, which is a standard thing for a babyface match, especially after such a great match, the Iron Man match. We're going to shake hands. We should shake hands, like in a normal situation. But I had said to Sean, I said, let's leave it open-ended. I'm going to walk off like I'm really mad that I lost the title. And I'm really angry about it. And I felt that I got screwed in that match. Because that was kind of the thread of the storyline. It was in the overtime and all that. So and we agreed mutually that we weren't going to shake hands. That's my understanding of it. And we were both cool with that. And I remember when I watched it back, I thought it got across that way. Like, gee, why didn't I shake his hand? And it was like a little... Those little details. And then I'm gone for a long time. I was taking a nice little hiatus. And I sort of had my whole mind was trying to think of ways to come back. And I thought the way I should come back, and I even talked with Vince before I left, was kind of that I was going to come back and be jealous and a little bit bitter towards Sean, who was going to keep climbing up the. I mean, there was every intention that Sean was going to be in that position for a while. So, I had flown down and seen Jim Ross and Vince at Stanford at his house, I think. And we talked about me coming back, and I said, this is what I thought. And I laid out this whole thing about me coming back, still as a baby face, but having a bit of a chip on my shoulder about having lost to Sean and Anaheim. And I said, watch, we'll start playing, I'll start attacking him as not being a very good role model because he's been doing the dancing with the kids and all that. I said, I'll kind of start ragging on Sean and think,
now I remember that's what I
said. I'll start getting on.
You made a comment about being what kind of parents would raise a kid that wouldn't be rude and I struggled with my sexuality. And at that time, that pissed me off, distressed me, I wasn't struggling.
I accept now that I maybe didn't handle all that as well as I could have, because I can remember Owen had told me, he called me the day after the WrestleMania match with Sean, and he told me, because everybody in the dressing room thinks you got a real heat with Sean because he didn't shake his hand, and everybody thinks there's a real tension between you guys. And I told him, I said, it was all math, it's planned that way. I'm just trying to. I said, if everybody in the dressing room thinks that we really hate each other and that there's a bad blood now between us, I said, that's good. Let me think of that, because when I come back, well, we're going to work a storyline based on that. We're going to try to make up, like, yeah, there is bad blood. You know, he cheated me out of the title and that bullshit Iron Man match. But, I had a great excuse. I was going to make a point of it. So, in the meantime, Sean's doing great as the champion, and it was a tough time business wise because WCW and NWO, all that was starting to just explode, and they were having an impact on things. So, I just remember when I came back, I think when I finally signed my deal, as Sean had done something with Playgirl magazine. And I just remember saying to Sean before, I know I said, Sean, I'm going to go in, I'm going to go up there, I'm going to rip into you about the Playgirl magazine. And I think Sean, man, he can speak for himself, but I don't think he thought it was going to be what I was going to, like, I don't think he thought it was going to be as stiff as it was when we were there. That's a stiff one. But, anyways, I really sort of made a big deal about Sean getting Playgirl and the role model thing. And I remember when I came back, I came up to Sean, I said, how was it? And I could see by the look on his face that it was like every single word. It was like, the shit's on now. All right, well, and then I think from there, Sean and me went for tit for tat. And Sean often started saying a lot of things about my family and my life and my parents and things like that. And I remember thinking, so it kind of went back. He poked me in the eye, and I poked him in the eye. And we went through this period. And whatever happened in Hartford was a little roll around in the dressing room and crashing through walls and stuff. It was just a case of two guys, I think, that were very proud of their positions and were trying to protect themselves. And in my sort of looking back on everything now, I realized that I think it was all just a big misunderstanding. Two guys were trying to do business. Sean had just was his first title run, so that's always a special time for any wrestler who wins a title for the first time. And for me, I was just trying to make money. I thought everything with Sean was going so well. The whole storyline, I thought, this is going to be the biggest thing. When we finally wrestle each other, it's going to be huge. And it's going to be great business because they think we really, really hate each other. And I really didn't have that much of an issue with Sean, but 6 months later, we got ourselves worked into a shoot. That's what happened.
There you go. So, I concur. So on November 1st, 1997, Brett officially signs a deal with WCW, which was going to take effect on December 5th. This was 9 nights before the Survivor Series event. So there was concern, Brett, obviously on the company's part, that you would take the then WWF title to WCW with you. And hence the reason we're here today. Is there any truth to that you would take the title?
That's all a bunch of baloney. First of all, the WWE belt, WWF belt back then, has a logo on it that says WWF, and it's, you can't, they were already in a lawsuit with WCW for Lemmy Graves having the WWE ladies belt in front of the garbage. So there was no chance that anyone was going to make the same stupid mistake twice and bring that WWE belt on WCW TV. It was against the law to do it. It was never going to happen. It was never talked about ever happening. There was never any intention of that. So that's all. That's a convenient excuse that sort of justifies nothing.
Sean, there were rumors flying around that you wouldn't do the job for Brett. Brett didn't want to do the job for you. He didn't want to drop the title in Canada. Bottom line, from what I understand, the night prior or the day prior, a disqualification finish had been worked out for this match. Is that correct?
Yeah. And I don't even know what point, but you know, a week or so before, Brett and Vince were discussing how it was they were going to handle the departure match. Really, all we knew was, each day was basically us what they're trying to talk to. But right now, they didn't want to do it, so the only thing we think is a disqualification. So up until, it was that way up until, the 0 hour, so to speak.
And apparently, the night before, Vince and some other people got together in a hotel room to come up with the so-called screw job heading into, of course, the Sunday. Jerry,
Did you have any? No, that's not actually true. There was a in Montreal. There was a production meeting at the hotel. They dismissed the production meeting, and I don't know. Four of us, I think, stayed. Vince, myself, Hunter, and Judy Bristol. And that's when Vince, you know, lets you know that he's football the rep, and as of right now, you know, it's not going to happen, so we have to very seriously consider, you know, not allowing him to walk out of the building with the title. And the fact that it's going to happen, and obviously, you know, no one did. And, you can hit your mind and think, well, you know, I have a number of things. Well, I know you would have asked, I know you would think of something, but, you know, making it happen. You know, again, it's like the whole, you know, so-and-so's going to reach out. Well, you know, everybody talks a bunch of stuff all the time. Very rarely does something come to fruition, you know. And this was the same thing, so we, you know, it was discussed, but there was still no answer because he was still going to, you know, he's still back tomorrow. It was like that. It was sort of like the guy at the, you know, on death row. Who's, you know, you sit there and he's, you know, he's about to get the needle and he's waiting for the governor to give him the call for that. To not do it. And that's basically how it was. All we knew was it's very likely going to have to happen unless we can come to an agreement. They had not come to an agreement, so the whole time it was then figuring out to happen and somehow do that without telling anybody. You know, I mean, you still have to have referee or nothing about it at that time, to my knowledge. That's something that years later, you know, I still have no idea who knew and who didn't. The people that I knew on that night that knew were me, Hunter, Bristow, and Vince, and that was it. And it was that way the next day up until, you know, I told Earl Hebner very quietly that this was going, you know, this is what was going to have to happen. And then, I heard from that point on that he went and then ran to his brother and asked him. And then I don't know if Dave knew at that time or, you know, I don't know who began to, you know, I don't know who knew once we went out, you know, who knew and who didn't anymore.
Brett, were you on the alert for a script?
Yeah, I had plenty of idea that it might happen or something, try something like that. And I was fully prepared to prevent it. But, I think it's important for me to talk about, how this, to me, if you want my honest, one single sort of thing that triggered this whole thing, the way it ended, it does come down to the conversation that Sean and I had prior to like a few weeks before the Survivor Series. Sean was refereeing our match in San Jose. I think it was me, Steve Austin, and Triple H in a triple threat match, and Sean was the referee. And this was just a few months after we had that little fight in the dressing room. And by this time I was sort of back in my cocky self again. My knee surgery was over and I was kind of back in my groove and having my matches, and I really kind of was hoping that I want to get things better with Sean. I wanted to kind of be on better terms with him. I realized that, okay, I'm as guilty as Sean for poking the eye and saying stuff that obviously was upsetting and offensive to him. So I tried now to be a little more conciliatory, and it was the first night that I actually heard, first day that I actually heard it's Brett and Sean's barbershops. And I thought, I don't know, if it isn't me and Sean's barbershops, it was now. It's like, I don't want any bad blood with the guy. I mean, all this was actually had good intentions to try to just draw, I was trying to draw money with him. And so after the match, I came up to Sean in the dressing room, and Jim Shamrock was there, and Jimmy Amble was there. And I came up to Sean and said, thanks for the match, because he refereed it. And I said, I just want you to know, I just found out today that we're wrestling at Survivor Series. And I just want you to know that whatever's happened between us, we had a little fight a few months ago. And I said, I just want you to know that I don't have any problem working with you, that I'm always professional in the ring, and that I got more respect for you than I realized. And when it comes to Survivor Series, I just want you to know that you're safe in the ring with me, and I just want you to know that whatever they want to do, win, lose, whatever they want, I don't have any problem putting you over any way they want. I'm happy to do whatever's good for the company. And Sean looked me in the eye with a dead, cold glare, and he said, I appreciate that, and I just want you to know that I'm not willing to do the same thing for you. And I can remember, it really stunned me. I just kind of just looked at him. I didn't even know what to say. And then he turned around and walked over to the restroom. And that was where the impasse came from. That was the whole, everything in a nutshell. If everything that we're talking about right now comes out of that moment of someone not willing to do the same thing for my family that I'd be willing to do to benefit his family, especially when I was the champion. I thought I made a pretty nice gesture on my part. And that really started the whole problem, more so now we had a real problem. Like, it was disrespect that was, to me, was not easy to get past. And so Vince, I saw him maybe 2 days later, 3 days later in Oklahoma somewhere for Monday Night Raw. And that's when he told me, which was Sean and Survivor Series, and we started talking to him, and probably dropped the belt to Sean, and he wanted to put him over. And I said to Vince, not a chance in hell. I will never, ever put him over. I told him what he said to me. I told him the whole, what I just described to you a minute ago. And Vince said, will you tell that same story to me in front of Sean? And I said, go get him. I mean, I don't have any problems saying it to him. And so maybe about an hour later, he got me and Sean in the dressing room, and Vince never brought it up. And he just told Sean that he was winning the title. And then I stood up and said, this is not what I've been talking about, and I'm not sure what I'm doing. Because at that point, I didn't know Sean or anybody knew that I was, my contract was being, they were talking about, they weren't going to pay me. They couldn't pay my contract. So I might get released and all this. And I was also told, for anyone that wants to know, is that I was told by Vince that I could leave any way I wanted. I didn't have to drop the belt. I could forfeit any way I wanted, I was told. So that's why I stood firm on all this stuff. And that was the problem. And again, that probably stems from all the shit that we said to each other back before that. But we got where Sean and I had technically got ourselves worked into a shoot that no matter what I said to Sean, he wasn't buying what I said anymore. He didn't trust me anymore. And I didn't really trust Sean anymore. And that's what happened.
So, is that your version of the story, Sean?
Yeah, no, man, I've done nothing. I certainly tried to make a point to let everybody know that back then I wasn't easy to deal with. And I had, make no mistake about that, I hacked myself. Do I remember looking at it and saying that? No, I don't. But again, this way, I remember a lot of stuff from back then. I don't deny it in any way, shape, or form. I can guarantee you, sure, I didn't look their way in the eye and very coldly said that, because I think that's a lot of people that, you can look at it one of two ways.
Yeah.
Basically, a bunch of guys set balls on them, didn't he? Or it was really stupid, I'm professional. But how long after both of them? That's just how it was. And we had gotten to the point where neither one of us could really give. I mean, that is just where we were.
We saw the footage before you guys came out here, the closing moments of the match, the finish, and obviously the aftermath. Jerry, you were at ringside calling the match. When the finish went down and you saw exactly what happened, what was running through your mind?
Well, I mean, to be honest with you, like Brett had referred to earlier, and like Sean actually referred to about the production meeting, it's one of the things that goes on every week before a Monday Night Raw or before a pay-per-view, and in the production meeting, Vince and all the TV crew and the personnel and everybody that's involved with the TV show are all in this meeting, and basically you go over pretty much the format for the show, just, so everybody knows what's going to take place, when and where, and it just is no big, starts to screw up, so there's no big messed up, foul up anywhere in the show. And these production meetings sometimes are very long and very tedious and very, always to me, have been very, very boring. And I always hated coaching.
Well, you still are going.
And if I can throw in just a real quick story here that has probably maybe a little something to do with this, but I don't go to the production meetings. One day, Michael Cole and I used to go to all the production meetings, and this was back when Vince was saying, The Undertaker. Remember where The Undertaker was? Just a quick story. I'll give you real quick. The Undertaker in this production meeting, Vince says, The Undertaker's going to come out, and this is when he had the Acolytes, or the whatever it was, the Acolytes. Anyway, Midian was going to be laid on this slab on the minister, that's it. So Midian was going to come out and be laid out on the slab. The Undertaker was going to come out and make him levitate. He was going to, with his magical powers, Midian was going to rise up off of the slab. And so I said, that's cool. I'm a fan of magic. That'd be fun to watch. So anyway, nothing more said. We get to Monday Night Raw that night. The show starts, we're about halfway through the show, out comes The Undertaker, brings out Midian, lays him on the slab, and all of a sudden The Undertaker's his hands going over him and everything. And Michael goes, now we're all the way at the ringside, this is happening back on the stage, so we're looking back like this, and the smoke is going, and Michael says, oh my God, look at that, he's levitating, he's rising in the air. And suddenly in our earphones, Vince says, you stupid son of a bitch. He's not levitating. We changed the whole thing.
He actually said more than that.
Yeah,
because we weren't PG then.
So anyway, what had happened was after the production meeting, when Michael and I were there, something about the levitation trick didn't work, so they decided to just scrap it, but they didn't come back and tell Michael and I. And so I used that excuse from then on to say, Vince, it's better if I'm not in the production meeting. That way there's no chance of me hearing something and get changed later, and then I'll screw it up out on the air. So I don't go to production meetings anymore, and I was not at this production meeting. So when I saw the whole thing unfold, I just thought that was what was supposed to happen. I thought, wow, this was like one of the, and one other thing too, it was not, to me, it was like, almost not certainly not run of the mill, but everybody in the WWE knows that nothing good ever happens to you if you're working a match in your hometown, or in this case, in your home country. Somehow they go out of their way to screw you when in front of your family and friends. It just happens. And then you don't think anything about it because you know it's going to happen. So I just thought, hey, this was a hot place for this hot thing to happen, and suddenly, people start throwing stuff. The only thing that gave me some inclination that maybe something has gone awry was when you stick the big loop right I'm standing there next to him like this, and I'm watching him literally wipe it right out of his eye. It's a heck of a shot.
Brett, from what we understand, that isn't the only shot that you took advantage of. Tell us what happened in the locker room after this all.
I didn't get to see this, but I heard. I was always a good spinner. When I was a kid, I could spin and hit like horse flies and stuff like that.
That's the same thing.
Especially after about
she's a good spinner,
25-minute match. You always get a couple of wings in the time. They're there. You know they're there if you fork them up. And that was like a. Like a 10A white omelet. It was like spit the moon white. What did you have off?
It took it was about another extra. Okay, as we move along. So what happened in the locker room, Brett? Tell us what happened when you confronted Vince in the locker room.
Well, I'm not proud of those days of my mind either. Knowing you live here watching the rest of the shadows, there's a point where I'm walking back to the curtain and I'm so mad. And I'm, feeling pretty indestructible. I'm feeling the Incredible Hulk, kind of the comic character, coming through there. And I remember I went up to Vince's, the door where Vince was. I go, where is he? He was in there. And there was a dressing room door that was iron. And there was no way in the world I could fight for the rest of my life trying to pound on that door, and I was never going to get in. I gave it one shoulder and I stopped. And then there was a calm that came over me. A hammer actually ran on my shoulder into the door, and I realized, like, oh, that's not going to work. And then I realized they've got Japanese reporters, and there's all these people. There was actually a little Japanese reporter walking along with me trying to get me, he'd be asking me an interview about everything. And I thought he must be stopped to translate for him and tell him what happened, and I was just sort of walking past him. The reality of it all was that I'm not a very angry guy, and I'm not a very violent guy, and it's not really my, there's not very many of those situations. It took a real man like Sean to bring all that out of me, but it's a gift. I really did calm right down. I came right from, like, as high angry as you can get to the low. That's it. That's my last, I'm done. Like, I can't get Vince or do anything or talk to him. And I was so hurt by the whole thing that I dropped it and walked down the hall, and it was like at peace with everything. I was not going, there was no more, there wasn't a violent bone left in my body at that point. It calmed. And I was still very upset by it, but I was very calm. And I think you can tell by that, most of the shadows when I came in the dressing room, when I looked over and asked Sean, like, were you part of that or something like that? And you can tell by my tone, I'm very calm now. It's like it's only porous. You know, I made my stand, and this is what happened to me, and I'm just going to get my stuff, and I'm just going to leave. But I was pretty calm. I'm still angry, but I can remember wanting to mix things up with Sean a little bit more, but I didn't know if Sean was in on it. And I actually, I've always said, Sean and me were really close friends at once upon a time. It was like, part of me thought, I don't know that Sean was in on this. It might have just been Vincent and Earl, maybe, for all I know. So I kind of said, I'm not going to overreact until I know what happened. And I took Sean at his word in the dressing room. I went and went for a big shower. And I remember when I went to take a shower, that Bulldog made a habit of always stealing my towel. I stole my towel. And so I had no towel, so I went and took a shower. And so while I was in the shower, it was when Rick Rude and Bulldog came in. They were like little kids that couldn't contain themselves. They were so excited. You know, Vince is in the dressing room, wants you to come talk to me. And I said, it was pretty calm. I said, you just tell Vince to get the hell out of here right now before something bad happens. And they went back and told Vince, and Vince said, now you tell me to come out here and wait for me. And I took all this as sort of a confrontation in a way. I had calm. I didn't want to fight anybody. I didn't want to fight Sean. I was kind of just trying to go home and, you know, make my home to all of it. And anyway, they came in and said, oh, he's waiting for you. And I said again, I said, you want to tell Vince that if you stand out there when I come out, I said, I'm going to knock him out. And I really don't know, but I knew that I was going to knock him out. Was a threat at the time. And they came back, they were almost excited because they knew something was going to happen. He's still going to stay. He wants to, you know, it actually started getting my blood up a little bit more. Like, now I come out of the shower and I walk down a little short little hallway out of the shower, and I come out and I'm sopping wet, dripping wet, no towel or anything. The only thing between me and Vince is a dirty towel on the floor. And so I remember thinking, I wanted to just knock him out. And I remember I controlled myself and bent over and I picked up the towel, and then we just had an exchange of words. And Vince, Vince was pretty calm, and I was pretty calm. And as I remember it, I think Vince said something like, this is the first time I ever had libel on my account. And I said, you can figure out what I said from there. I just remember I said something to him. I said, as soon as I get dressed, if you're still standing there, I said, I'm going to knock you out. And as you're doing all this thing, I remember, like, put my pants on, and I'm still drying off. I remember I put one shoe on at a time. I was tying my last shoe, and I retired the shoelace. And I'm going, there's nothing else to put on. Right? This is it's showtime. It's quite surreal to me now when I think about it, because it was Sean, and I think it was Undertaker. This is where we're sitting right now. Shawn's in the corner, Undertaker, and then over on this side was Owen, Davey, who else? Rick Rude was in there. And behind Vince was Sergeant Slaughter, Shane McMahon, and I'm not sure who else. I don't think Paul was in there. But it was kind of like a gunfight. I remember it was like there's a sort of one side, and then Vince had sort of the office, the corporate side on one, the other side. And I just remember when I tied my shoelace, I was thinking, okay, this, I can't believe I'm doing this, but I'm actually going to, you know, me and Vince are going to have a little dust up here. And me and Vince, if you watch this whole thing, I suspected that it was going to be like a pullback. I mean, what else could it be? Me and Vince are going to get into a little scrum, we're going to grab each other, and then from that point, about 12 guys are going to jump in and pull us apart. And in the end, nobody gets hurt, nothing happens, but and I'm thinking all this, it's the only thing that can happen. You're not going to let me and Vince actually fight in their own ways. You know, if they're calm, people, you know, people are meeting Sean about that fight, if you want Jerry to fight in it, you know, no, rest of these. We don't get paid to fight in the dressing rooms too much, so there's generally a consensus amongst the wrestlers and your peers and stuff to pull you apart. And so I sensed that was going to happen, and I'm thinking, I don't want that to happen. I don't want just to pull apart and then everyone say, like, this show Brett, and Brett didn't get nothing on that kind of thing. And so I remember when we tied up like just like two wrestlers in a wrestling match. And I kind of dropped my hand right to the, you know, I remember it sort of in my mind, it was almost near my right foot, it was so low. And then I turned it upwards, and I always call it my rocket launcher punch. So I came up right between his arms, because everyone was just about to pounce on us and grab the arms. And if I come over him, they would have grabbed it for sure, and we wouldn't even be talking about it now. But instead, I came between his arms, and I probably didn't say this, it's probably a lucky punch. But I, boy, did I cork him.
I watched one thing with like a
broke my hand,
kickstand. Like kicking a kickstand, like, you know.
I hit him as hard as I could, and I really, really connected. I mean, I connected so hard I broke my hand, right here, for real. And I don't know if I broke Vince's jaw, but I might have been pretty close. And I know he had a shiner and all that from all that. And I also think he rolled his ankle when he landed and hurt his foot. And, you know, it's not really anything that special about it, but that's the way I remember him.
The next day was Ottawa, Monday Night Raw. Sean was the new champion. There was a mutiny on our hands.
Thank you.
You were there. Nick Foley didn't show up. Half the superstars were threatening to quit the company. That was some scene. I remember I'd been in the company for 5 or 6 months at the time. I thought I was going the other way in line. Sean, describe what it was like.
Well, gosh, not fun. Vince wanted all responsibility on him. You know, as much as, you know, he could, you know, he wanted to take all the heat. Obviously, you know, no matter how much you try to explain to him, like, it's not going to go on you. Okay, I mean, we have this history. Now this has happened. It's going to go on me. And, you know, that night, I mean, the biggest issue I had, and obviously the doing wasn't the part. The part of the problem with the emotion was, you know, believe it or not, at that time of my life, I would have much rather look him in the eyes he got in. And that's just who I was then. Whether we got into a fight, you know, I'd have been asking him, whatever, because that would have bothered me a lot less than having to say, no, I didn't know. But that's what Vince wanted. He wanted the heat to go onto him and not for it to have anything to do with me. You know, no matter, you have to know the guy. Even when you explain an impossibility to him, he doesn't get it. You know what I mean? And so it's like, it's going to go on me. And so here we are the next day. You know, Claire and I are going now. There's only, you know, we're going to go to Ottawa. We're going to do TV. And we don't know if we're going to get, we don't know if we're going to come in and, you know, do punch. We're going to be fighting what the situation is. My biggest concern at that time, obviously, for me, the one guy, you know, other than Brett that I wanted to tell that I knew, was Undertaker. It was important to me that he knew the truth of everything. And that was something that I made clear to them prior to all this happening. Thankfully, we get to TV, and it's the first thing I ever asked him, what my mark is, so I want to talk to him. And everybody tells me, Undertaker, that, you know, he's here talking with Vince. So I sit and I wait there until they come out. Undertaker comes walking out, comes over, shakes his hand out, shakes my hand, says, we're good. That's it. To this day, I never even thought to, you know, we moved on so many different places. I never thought to ask him, hey, like, did he tell you that I knew, or what was the scheme going on in there? But that philosophy, and then obviously went and asked Vince, what are we doing now? And he said he was going to have a meeting. And then, you know, I don't know if you were there, we had a little talent meeting. Everybody showed up, and Vince sort of, in a lot of ways, sort of renovated the Riot Act. You know, on our site, you know, get the bricks. Told the Knicks and the ball leading guys, like, if you guys want to leave, they're going to leave permanently. He used to say they all came back, and that was his decision. Again, doing everything he could to, take the heat. But then obviously, our biggest concern, it was funny how we had that idea, I had to wrestle with Shamrock. And Shamrock and I were friends, and we thought, like, holy cow, we were going to, he's the most dangerous man in the world. I don't know if that's true or not, but he's certainly more dangerous than I am, I'm sure. So, obviously, that was a concern of mine.
We're going to open up the floor to questions in just a moment, but to Sean's point, what he was talking about earlier, the fact that Vince wanted all the heat to go to him, and he actually had an interview with Jim Ross on Monday Night Raw, which we're going to show you here in a second, talking about this incident. And this was the night, really, that the Mr. McMahon character was born. And let's show you exactly how Vince McMahon addressed the situation the night after on Raw from Ottawa.
Let's cut right to the chase. 7 days ago at the Survivor Series, did you or did you not screw Bret Hart?
Some would say, I screwed Bret Hart. Bret Hart would definitely tell you, I screwed him. I look at it from a different standpoint. I look at it from the standpoint of the referee did not screw Bret Hart. Shawn Michaels certainly did not screw Bret Hart. Nor did Vince McMahon screw Bret Hart. I truly believe that Bret Hart screwed Bret Hart. And he could look in the mirror and know that.
I'm sure in some parts of the country right now there's a collective groan that you're not accepting responsibility, that you orchestrated the situation, and the fact that people are not going to understand what you mean by Bret Hart screwed Bret Hart. So what do you mean by that?
Well, I would certainly take responsibility for any decision ever made. I never had a problem doing that. Not that all of my decisions are accurate. They're not. But when I make a bad decision, I'm not above saying I'm sorry. I'm trying to do the best about it that I can. Hopefully the batting average is pretty good. I make more good decisions than I do bad decisions. And as far as screwing Bret Hart is concerned, there's a time-honored tradition in the wrestling business that when someone is leaving, that they show the right amount of respect to the WWF superstars in this case, who helped make you that superstar. You show the proper respect to the organization that helped you become who you are today. It's a time-honored tradition, and Bret Hart didn't want to honor that tradition. And that's something I would have never, ever expected from Bret, because he is known somewhat as a traditionalist in this business. It would have never crossed my mind that Bret would not have wanted to show the right amount of respect the superstars who helped make him, and the organization who helped make him what he is today. Nonetheless, that was Bret's decision. Bret screwed Bret.
Are you able to step back and objectively look at this thing and evaluate your friend, your perhaps former friend, Bret Hart, the human being, and have sympathy for this man?
Sympathy. I have no sympathy for Brett whatsoever. I have no sympathy for someone who was supposed to be a rational traditionalist, not doing the right thing for the business that made him, not doing the right thing for the fans and the performers and the organization who helped make him what he is today. Brett made a very, very selfish decision. Brett's going to have to live with that for the rest of his life. Brett screwed Brett. I have no sympathy whatsoever for Brett.
So before we get to questions from the WWE fans, Brett, I'd like you to respond to that. What were you thinking when you heard that for the first time?
Well, I think that's actually the first time I ever watched the whole thing. I really did. I don't think I ever watched the whole thing. I don't think I ever saw this little piece on Wrestling the Shadows. Again, it goes back to, I never refused the time-honored tradition of doing honors for anybody in my whole career. And never would have. It was never that big of an issue to me. It was certainly not anyone, for anyone who thinks it's about losing in Canada or whatever, it was the point. I mean, I lost in Canada enough times. It had nothing to do with that. What it comes down to was not having that respect from Sean. It goes back to the conversation that we had in the dressing room in San Jose, of him saying that he would not do the honors for me under any circumstances ever. And that bothered me so much that I said that I'm the champion. And at least as far as Sean goes, I will never, ever put him over anywhere, ever, until he puts me over first. And that was what I said to Vince for the rest of the week. And the next, and I said, as soon as Sean puts me over, I'll put him over the next day on whatever show you want. I'll put him over live on Monday Night Raw tomorrow, you know, online. I'll do whatever you want. Yeah, I said, I'll drop the belt to Steve Lombardi. I was supposed to work with the Brooklyn Brawler, and that's just where I'm at. So I mean, as far as the time-honored tradition line, I mean, I agree. And I don't have a lot of respect for guys that don't honor the time-honored traditions of the business. And as Vince called me traditionalist, I was a traditionalist. And I took a lot of pride. I grew up in the business like Vince did. I've loved the business since I was a little kid. And I just felt that I had every right to take the position that I did, and I stood firm by it, and I'm by it today, all these years later. I spoke about me and Sean pushing each other's buttons and the personality clashes that we had at the time, and I think a lot of that comes from the fact that I was really passionate about who I was, my character, my career, my fans, everything that I contributed to the company. And Sean's the same. He just kicked open the door to sort of the best part of his career. He finally got on top. Just a personality. Two personalities that have a lot of emotion and passion and energy. We kind of hit this wall with each other, and that's all. These are all the ramifications of that.
So we're going to open up the floor now to questions from the WW University, for me to say. We're going to start over on this side.
Now, 3 years ago, here in Phoenix, was the first WrestleMania I went to. That was when Brett, you came back to wrestle Mr. McMahon, and Sean, you retired in the main event. And that was actually the first WrestleMania that both you guys played a prominent role in, since you wrestled each other an Iron Man match. Did that dawn on you guys? Did you talk about that? What did you think of that?
I don't think it really occurred to us. I think more importantly, I think we both, both been through a lot in the time that, for like 97,
both been through so much in our lives and the changes that Sean's a family guy now, and he's a devout Christian. For me, having suffered a stroke and gone through some of the changes that I had to deal with in my life, I really think that when we came to the point where, like, Phoenix and the year prior to all this, I think we both, the truth about the whole burying the hatchet with Sean really came about from, Tyson the Kid and Harry and Natalie always talking to me about Sean and saying that, Sean really helps us with our matches and stuff and little things, and things were good for the mirror. And I remember, there was a part of me going, that's the old Sean that I used to like, he's actually, we always got along with his good friends. And of course, I still have a lot of bitterness to me to what happened. But I remember I told, I think it was Tyson Kidd who came up to me. He talked to Sean, and Sean said he felt so bad about everything that happened that he wished he could just fly up to Calgary and just knock on my door and let me beat the hell out of him if that's what I wanted to do, kind of thing. He wanted to get it over with. He was tired of having this to hang over his head all the time. It was like a burden. And I remember I told TJ, I said, give him my number. I said, tell him to call me. If me and Sean just talk on the phone for 10 minutes, we can kind of, you realize that I don't have as much bitterness towards him. I'm bitter about what happened a little bit, but I'm not as bitter towards him. I realize now, looking back on everything, that I'm guilty of pushing his buttons a lot, too. It wasn't just Sean that made this whole thing happen, that I had a big part in it. And so I kind of offered that olive branch to tell Sean that, and I remember it never happened, but I remember it was through that effort, and I think we both just realized as it progressed that it was, I think it was better to be friends than to go back. We had too many good memories, and I miss a lot of people, like my brother Owen, and I miss Bulldog, and I miss a lot of my friends from back in those days. And so when I reminisce about some of those days and my old pals from those days, I don't have that many guys I can reminisce with, but I remember Sean being with me all the time in those days. Sean, Perfect, so many memories of good times. And it wasn't all bad times. It wasn't all this blood feud and war that we had at the end. And so I was always... when I called Vince, I said, look, I want to bury the hatchet with Sean. I said, it doesn't have to be on TV. It doesn't have to be anywhere. I said, you'll just be in the dressing room in Calgary next time you guys are up and down. And I want Sean to know that I don't have this anger towards him that maybe he thinks of him. And that's really where it started. It all started with the best of intentions. And I think it was very, when people see that moment, they talk about that Monday Night Raw where me and Sean shook hands. The truth is that we really did shake hands for real. And I remember when Sean came in the back of the building and we kind of met briefly in the catering room, we both sort of said, look, we don't want to do this here. We don't want to have a big makeup scene here for the caterers. I said, let's do it for real out in the ring. We didn't talk to each other. Sean was totally a total gentleman with me, and we're both really cool with one another. When people say that whole thing that we did in the ring was for ratings or whatever, it wasn't for anything but for just two guys who used to be friends during the hatchet for real.
But I guess
it was best we can get.
Yeah, but it's that, I mean, the specialness was that night. I mean, by the time WrestleMania rolled around, Brett and I had already gone personally where we needed to go. And that's one of those things that, I mean, I guess it's unfortunate, for you guys to be able to see all of that. Think about it, it's 15 years. Every interview you do, everything you do,
it's not a huge knowledge, it's not a burden, it's not, but it's just, it gets old.
Most of us, if you're doing the right thing, you get to a point where you're a little older and you go,
if there's some things, you know, there's still some things you have the power to change. I guess I don't encourage you to go back and change that. It's the greatest thing in the world. And so, point being, you know, by WrestleMania, the special stuff was already had already happened with us, which was obviously a phenomenal thing.
Another little factor I just want to say, another big contributing factor to me bearing the hatchet and coming back and all that was also the match that Sean had with Undertaker that I think was that WrestleMania before. I remember watching it, and I remember I turned off the TV and said, that was unbelievable. What a great match. I thought that was one of the greatest matches I ever watched, and I was so proud of Sean. Like, in a funny kind of way, I was like, God, I can't believe he pulled all that off. Like, he's close to my age. And it's like, you know, I just was so impressed with Sean's ability in the ring and the effort that he gave in the match and Undertaker that it just rekindled my sort of love of the business and wrestling and the good stuff that we get from being professional wrestlers and the trust and sort of the work that we put together and the passion that we have for it. It all kind of came to that, and that's one. That was the biggest thing. I want to see Sean. I want to shake his hand, and I want to do it for real. And it came from a lot of ways. It was the wrestling business that brought us back together. It was a great match that both of us had. That made kind of rang a bell with me and said, "I'm tired of being mad. I want to be friends with Sean. I want to be friends with the company. I want to look back on my career and be proud of it. I don't want to be always seen as a bitter, kind of angry guy that's, you know, mad about everything, because I'm not an angry guy. I'm not mad about what happened. I've only been really grateful for all the good things that I've got from being the birthday in that heart and being in the WWE.
Questions on this side?
Hi,
Jeff. Hi.
My name is Dave, and WrestleMania 12 was my first event I attended live, seeing your Iron Man match. Phenomenal. My question is for you, both Sean and Brett. Take us back to the night of Survivor Series, and could you walk us through what was going through your mind prior to your match as you're waiting for your music to hit?
Well, certainly for me, I mean, it was, again, nerve-wracking. I mean, obviously, it's sort of like going out for a pay-per-view, and I mean, your last thing is to tell, you know, go up and have your best. You don't know what you're doing at the end. You know, that's, and by the way, it's on the last. You know, you still need to get whatever you've got. 45 minutes left of airtime. You've got to do all the things that you have to do for a regular pay-per-view match. But because you know something, you and two other people know something totally different is going on. You need to take care of all the regular stuff that goes on, and then somehow make this happen here, which, by the way, we didn't mention, is going to be the absolute most controversial thing to ever take place in the wrestling business, and it's going to be on your shoulders. You know what I mean? And that's the honesty, and again, to that extent, it's publicly, it's like one of the things, truthfully, and I love it, you know, I love it. But I mean, I think that's why, you know, he was so adamant about wanting to take the heat. I think, had he been able to be the guy who wanted to do that, he would have done it. That's the kind of guy he is. But this was the first time he needed something done that he couldn't do. And he knew that he put that on somebody that, you know, I mean, we didn't get along. That's all I was. I mean, I took zero joy in doing any of this. I mean, it wasn't something that, you know, like, all right, I get to do this. I mean, I'm kind of done with this. Everything's going to be going to hate me. What? You know, it's just not the way my mindset. So it's the most, for me, it was the most wonderful feeling ever. And again, it's one big unknown. You don't know what you're going to get out there. You know, I mean, I don't know, you know, again, the same fight that happened in the locker room, you know, that's going to go on live TV. You know, you don't know what's going to happen when you come back to the dressing room. You don't know what's going to happen when you sit in the dressing room. You know what's going to happen when you step out of the shower. You don't know what's going to happen when you go. You've got to get from the building to the hotel. You know, coming in from the dressing room the next day. It is absolutely the most uncomfortable feeling I've ever had in my entire life.
Well, as for me, it was probably, I can say without any hesitation, I think the most stressful day of my life, maybe the night before. I really didn't know what was going to happen either. I had taken a position and I was going to stand by it, and I was sticking to my guns right till, the day, I was sticking to my guns. And when I showed up that day with the camera crew, which I never, the funny thing about the Rest in the Shadows camera crew is that they all wrapped up in September. They were finished. And I talked to Paul Jay, the director or producer of that, Rest in the Shadows. And he goes, I don't have an ending. We don't have an ending to this documentary. We've got boxing, we've got you at the hockey game, we've got you doing stuff with kids. And I said, well, how about did you come to Montreal and film my last match in Canada? I said, maybe that's an ending for your partner. And so when I showed up in Montreal, they were not supposed to be there. And all of a sudden, I'm coming in the back door, and you can see it, because we got the camera on, and that's all the light, and, I get this whole mob of documentary people filming me to walk in, and I think there must have been a collective sigh, like, wow, those guys, But I remember Paul Jay had mic'd me up, and, I would never dream of going into a meeting with Vince and be mic'd, and I remember I started to take it off. I said, I better have gotten more of this on and go down with this. And he said, maybe you should clean it off just in case something happens. And I was like, all right, whatever, maybe just in case. So I went in to meet Vince. I walked right in with the wire on, and one that's on was behind my shirt. But it wasn't the kind of, I didn't really, actually, I was thinking, there's got to be a way around this. There's no reason why we can't do this and make everybody can be happy. It's got to be a, let's find a common ground or solution to this whole thing. I've taken a position on what Sean said to me a few weeks ago, and I just thought that maybe there's a way we could find some way to work it out. I still think there was a lot better ways to work it out than what we did, or what they did. But I went in, Vince basically told me that we're going to do a run-in. It's going to be a schmoes at the end, and it's going to be a little pull apart, and and I was like, really? Like, I was so relieved. It was like a million pounds off. I was like, I thanked him, and I walked out and was like, they're going to do it my way. There is no problems. So I was certainly apprehensive, and I certainly had enough rest because I can remember Vader coming up to me about 20 minutes before I went into the ring and telling me, just watch your back, and just try to screw you. Always happens in the business. And I just remember saying, I always knew it could happen. I did my best to stop it from happening, to protect myself. But it comes down to the simple, I had a conversation with Earl Hebner the night before. And I remember I pulled Earl to Earl's side, and I said, tomorrow, Earl, in Montreal, they're going to ask you to screw me. I already know, I can tell. It's the only way they can go. They're going to ask you to screw me. And Earl, I'm sure he meant it when he said it, and he got tears in his eyes, and he actually got big tears in his eyes, and had a couple where he came down his cheeks and said, I would never do that to you, ever. I said, I'd never do that to you, and I swear to God, I swear to my kids, I would never ever do that to you. And I remember we had a long talk about it, and I remember I walked out and I said, well, at least I got, Earl, I went there thinking the next day that I was going to insist that Earl referee my match, because that's how confident I was that he could protect me and make sure that of all the rest of the referees that were going to be in there, Earl would be most trusted in the room. So that's really the only way I got that ever happened to me that day, was that the guy that I really thought, the only guy that could go to screw me would be the ref, and he had swore to me that it would never happen. And, I was angry enough at Earl for about a day or two or a few weeks maybe, but the reality of it is that it was a really ridiculous thing to expect out of somebody, and I don't know that you could expect that out of anybody to put his life and his job and his family and all his everything that he's got for him on the line for me. And it was wrong for me to think that to allow that to it just wasn't going to happen. I look back now, I was like, okay, that was my Achilles tendon.
was thinking that I had the referee in my pocket and that wouldn't happen. And that's how they snagged me that day. So that's the way it works.
We have time for, I think, maybe one or two more questions. Go to this side here.
Hi. I have a couple of questions, actually. This is
one question. Sorry, one question.
Okay. Well, my mom's made a comment, like, is this really important for people still? And I was in high school, I was about 17 when this happened. And to me it was, and the reason it was a big deal, this match between you guys, is because, you know, nowadays you take your Rock, your Cena, it seems like it's almost come full circle to back in the days when there was Hulk Hogan and there wasn't a lot of drama involved. Like, you never really doubted that they were going to lose their matches or who they were behind the scenes. I remember growing up and watching Jerry in regional wrestling. You were my Shawn Michaels before Shawn was, and I think you guys are just the three best that there have ever been. I may agree. But it's funny, you guys were so you. Like, Shawn, you never put on a character. And Brett, you were just the best. You know what I mean?
That's the fucking question.
There was so much drama. There was so much really passionate about who we were character-wise. So I took a lot of pride in being David and Hart, and I know that Shawn took a lot of pride in being Shawn Michaels. And we both were two guys that gave everything to every performance, every match. And Iron Man is a real testimony of how hard two guys can wrestle. I mean, we were always so proud of each other, I think. You know, it's just two guys that are very competitive and have a lot of drive and both want to be on top, and that happens, and that's a good thing. You get that in sports, and you get that in the NFL, and you get it all over the world, and you get two real dedicated, two guys at the top of their game at the right time, and it really makes for magic. And I know I go back to my original, what I said a little while ago, about my intentions when I lost the belt to Shawn at the Ironman match, I wanted to come back and work with Shawn over and over and over again. I was trying to build a story of, you know, I was the bitter, you know, ex-champion that never got over the fact that he beat me at WrestleMania 12. And I wanted to wrestle him again the next year and have, like, another classic match that we'd be talking about now on this stage, and then maybe another one 6 months later. I thought, you know, I look back at 97 at the screw job, and I can say this with a lot of pride, that I was in my prime. I don't think, you look at Bret Hart and his career with Hitman, I never had better matches than I had in those days. I gave everything every night, and especially when they gave me that big contract for 20 years. I felt a duty to go out there and to give everybody absolutely the best effort every single night, every single way. And I, you know, the truth is that the Montreal Screwjob is that I already fulfilled my contract. I didn't even need to show up in Montreal that day. I only had to wrestle so many days a year, like 220 or something like that. And I'd already wrestled about 235 days or something. And I was already done. I could have just showed up and said, I'm done. I don't have to even work today. I'm already finished. But I didn't want to. I would never do that to my peers and the guys in the dressing room. And, you know, I really, you know, a lot of ways I think I can look back and be sorry for all the things that happened. But I know that 1997, when I was with Shawn in the Survivor Series match itself, you know, I gave every effort to make that the best match possible. And the SummerSlam match I had with Undertaker was one of the best matches of my career. I won the title for the fifth time. I remember wrestling the Patriot and a bunch of guys that summer. And I thought I brought out the best in each opponent, every match, the Stampede pay-per-view, even the match with Steve Austin in WrestleMania 13. I was really trying my hardest to give everything to Vince. I wanted him to whip WCW. I wanted to be his charging horse. And the reality is that Shawn wanted to be that too. And that's where all this came about, I guess.
Can I say something really quickly about the statement that Big Man just made? What this, we're all, you guys are talking about, what we're talking about here is and as much as Shawn, you get tired of hearing about it, and you, Brett, hear it over and over and over, but what it is a defining moment. And you guys have that defining moment. Just think of it. I mean, I sometimes think of the thousands, maybe even more than that, guys who came into this business, wanted to be a big superstar, and had, you know, a long career, a successful career, but really, how many of them have a defining moment? How many guys that have gone before you guys? I mean, that's what everybody's striving for. Everybody wants to have the defining moment. I mean, and I, fortunate enough, to, as weird as it was, in 1983, wrestled a guy named Andy Kaufman, and still to this day, we'll talk to him about that. This was a defining moment that you guys gave to the world, gave to all these fans, that literally, as is, these people are a testament to, probably will live forever. And it's and I just think that you guys deserve, and even whether you want to be a part of it or not, you've made this defining moment, and it was so special that it will probably live forever. So, I mean, I think that it's something that you probably really should never get tired of hearing about, because it was so special and it took you guys to do it. And I think that these two superstars deserve a great round of applause.
The same way that you entered. And a reminder, coming up tonight at 8 o'clock, this should be real interesting, the D-Generation X shooting straight right here at 8 o'clock. Thank you guys for coming. We'll see you soon.